There are few things that give you more of a lift when winter is dragging on than getting out to go to a wonderful garden show. You know, the colors, the smells, the excitement, enough to get your gardener's heart pumping, isn't it? Hi, Larry Mueller here. Thanks for joining us today for another edition of Garden Talk on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Lisa Johnson, my guest today, UW Extension Horticulture Educator for Dane County. She specializes in horticulture education for the home gardener, works with the Master Gardener Program, and Lisa has some great tips for enjoying the Garden Expo. And Lisa, always a pleasure.
Thanks, Larry. It's good to be back.
Great to have you back. And of course, you and I are going to be front and center at Garden Expo.
Yeah. It's always fun.
9:30 Saturday morning, we're talking and sharing some information, answering questions from probably a pretty good group of people at the expo.
Yeah, you always bring them in.
I think it's so much fun to look forward to something like Garden Expo. It's green. It smells wonderful.
God, it just makes you feel like maybe winter will end at some point.
Yeah, and just the whole weekend, you know, at the Dane County Expo grounds. And if you're going to attend, are there some tips for getting the most out of an event like this?
Sure. Well, the first thing I would do is go to the website or look in your newspaper, and there should be a copy of the catalog, I believe, in there. But the website is probably quicker. Go through and take a look at the seminars and demos that are being offered. Maybe print that out and highlight the ones that you want to attend. Some of them are being offered more than once, so you know, make note of those so that you're sure not to miss anything that you want to get to. Take a look at the vendor list. We've got a whole ton of wonderful vendors there, and kind of map out where you want to go. Be sure to wear comfortable shoes. That's always my advice. Mm. It's cement floors, and you're going to be on your feet a lot. And prepare to have a good time. Bring along some big bags or a backpack to put all your purchases in, because you know you're going to make some. So it's a good time.
You know, and it's not a bad idea to have an idea in your head about your garden. How big is your garden? Maybe.
Yeah, all your gardening questions.
Bring those along, because there's experts there.
Right. The UW Extension booth. We will have Phil Pelletieri, as usual. We'll have experts from the soils lab.
Scott Craven's going to be there.
Yep. Brian Huddleston's going to be in a different booth, but he's going to be there too. So, you know, bring all of your questions. Our publications unit is going to be there too. So you can pick up publications on many different gardening topics. It's a real educational, I'd say the premier educational garden event in the Midwest.
I would definitely agree with that. And the other thing, if you've got photos, if you took like last fall or last summer, if there were issues with your plants and you got some photos, bring them along.
Yeah, that always helps to have a visual. You know, when people ask me, what should I grow here? Or, you know, it's on the west side of my house. And or they ask me for a tree recommendation. And boy, it sure helps to have a picture, because then I can say, oh, there's some power lines there. Mm-hmm. You know, we need to be careful of those, or, you know, something that didn't come up in conversation. Pictures a thousand words. They're right.
Well, so it's Garden Expo time, and it's this weekend, so I hope we'll see a lot of people there. And I'm really looking forward to it, and I just love to get over there just because it's warm, mm-hmm. and it smells so good, and it's so green.
Yeah. The Wisconsin Landscape Association does a really nice job with that central booth, and also a number of the vendors, the Bruce Company and Bassett and C.R. Stevenson. I'm sorry, not C.R. Stevenson, Landscape Designs, Inc. They always have, you know, plants, Rich's Fox Willow. I could go on and on, but they always have some Klein's. It has plants.
So lots
yeah,
there. And on, I wanted to go to the garden, to the site, the website, and I just typed in Garden Expo, and up it popped.
Oh, yeah,
I mean, the official is wigardenexpo.com.
Mm-hmm.
So if people want, or if you're on my Facebook page at the Larry Mueller Show, we've got a link there. But it's really worth it, I think, to go ahead and get a look at what sort of the layout and what kinds of activities and what kinds of presentations you're going to be able to see and hear at the Garden Expo.
And being sponsored by the by WHA-TV mm-hmm. and UW Extension, Cooperative Extension, there is definitely an educational focus.
Big focus on that. But also a whole lot of vendors. I don't think I've ever been there that I didn't at least buy one thing.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. But, you know, the show, of course, was really the brainchild of Shelley Ryan,
yeah.
Our good friend and colleague who passed away last month. And I know we're going to be doing some special things to commemorate her life mm-hmm. and her work.
Yeah, it's and you and I will be doing that Saturday morning at 9:30 in our presentation. And I know Wisconsin Public Television is going to be doing some things at its main booth, too.
Right. So. And the extension booth, we also will have some cards that you can fill out and send to the family. There will be a small memorial there and also at Brian Huddleston's Plant Disease Diagnostics Clinic booth.
So lots of opportunities, and I hope you'll take advantage of that.
We're going to miss Shelley this year.
That's going to be tough. Because you and I and Shelley were together on that stage quite a number of times.
Quite a number of years. Yeah, it was always so much fun.
Yeah. Lisa Johnson, our guest today, Dane County UW Extension Horticulture Educator. Talk a little bit about Garden Expo, but obviously she's here to answer your gardening questions as well, or maybe your flower questions, indoor flower questions. We hope we'll certainly join in. People are asking about the cost, and blast it all, I can't remember off the top of my head what there's a small fee.
I believe it's seven.
$7. I think it's $7 for adults.
Yeah, and there's a parking fee as well.
We'll get that up.
Yeah, we'll check that out at the website.
So parking was $6. And it's $7 admission for adults. Probably, I think it might be $5 for children or something. So anyway, our parking is $6.50, Judith tells me. So we've got that for you, and we'll get the exact cost. I'm sure it's $7 for adults. I'm not sure what the cost is for.
Is that a per day?
Right. There's also a weekend kind of thing, too. So. Anyway, we'll give you that information. And in the meantime, if you want to join in, maybe have a question for Lisa, give us a call. The number is 1-800-642-1234, 1-800-642-1234. You can email us at talk@wpr.org, or you can post on my Facebook page. Just go to the Larry Mueller Show. Children under 12 are free. At the door, it's $8 to get in if you're an adult. Children under 12 are in free. A two-day is $12 at the door, so you can pay $12 at the door and get a two-day. So there is the price differential, and it's really, frankly,
it's so worth it. I mean, it's such a steal, really.
Oh, my goodness. Rich in Almena has a question for you, so let's go there. Hi, Rich. Thank you for calling.
Good morning.
Morning.
First, a quick comment. I remember when I was in the Army in Germany, this time of year, Berlin, Germany always had an International Green Week.
And
Holland had one exhibition hall, and before you got to that hall, you could start to smell all the flowers that they had in there.
Yeah.
Wow. Yeah, we do at the expo, much smaller, of course, but there are lots of blooming bulbs.
Yes. My question is on hostas. We have lots of them,
mm-hmm.
and we're always replanting. Now, I've heard different people say that you should do it in the fall. But we've always done ours in the spring.
You know, hostas are so tough
that
really it doesn't make a whole lot of difference in terms of the vigor and growth of the plant. It's certainly a lot easier to do in the spring before the leaves completely unfurl and are waving around in your face. But I have done it in spring, summer, and fall. And frankly, although spring is usually the recommendation, I really don't think that it makes a whole lot of difference. Yeah. And hostas are one of my favorite plants.
Yeah, I love hostas.
We've always done ours like as soon as the ground is thawed out enough to be able to dig.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, before when the buds are first starting to come out is when we've always done ours. And one spring, I think from what we dug up and then replanted into, broke off, I think we done 120.
Wow.
Wow.
I think that's more than I have in my entire yard.
You're the hosta king, Rich.
I think last count, we've got 260.
Well, I'm jealous. I'm officially jealous.
That's great. And you must have a pretty good-sized lawn area or an area there for the hostas.
Oh, yeah. Yep. We live out in the country, and we've got close to 3 acres, but then there's like an acre and a half that we do our mowing on.
Yep.
Well,
you're living the good life, and I enjoyed hearing about it. Frankly,
yeah.
It's nice. And as you say, Lisa, doesn't matter really when you. I suppose if you planted it, if you did it in the heat of August and there hadn't been any rain
or that could be an issue. But in general, they're very tough plants. It's not like peonies where you really should do it in the fall. They're very not very fussy.
I planted 10 or a dozen along a fence line of crappy soil.
Uh-huh.
It gets completely shaded out by the grape plants that are growing on the fence, and yet they still
do well.
They're still doing fine.
Yeah, it depends. There's some varieties that are a little fussier than others, but in general, they do very well here in the Midwest.
Thanks, Rich. Appreciate the call. Lisa Johnson, Dane County UW Extension Horticulture Educator, our guest. I'm Larry Mueller. Judith Sears Poisson, our producer, on Garden Talk on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Taking a look at your garden and maybe your indoor flowers and talking Garden Expo today with Lisa Johnson, Dane County UW Extension Horticulture Educator. Thanks for tuning in. Questions for her? Give us a call. The number's 1-800-642-1234. Email us at talk@wpr.org. Or post on my Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show. Paul in Schulzburg has a question. Paul, hi. Thank you for calling.
Yeah, good morning. It seems like I always have my tomatoes getting ripe, towards the end of the year. And this year I want to start them inside and maybe get an earlier start. And I'm wondering what's the earliest practical time that I could start growing from seed?
Well, we usually recommend about mid-March. What tends to happen if you start them too early is that they get big and gangly and weak-stemmed and so on. And you can plant them a little bit deeper if that happens. But usually by the time down here in Madison, anyway, that we can plant them outside, they're about as big as we can let them get. Now, I know some people will start them earlier if they have grow lights and enough space and are willing to transplant them several times. But usually, if you look on the seed packets, they typically will tell you 6 to 8 weeks before the last frost date. So Schulzburg, you're probably somewhat comparable to us. Now, we've had cold springs the last couple of years, so there have been a couple times where I've been like, darn, I wish I would have started them a week later, because they do start to get pretty big. And
The first time I started them indoors, this was years back, I stuck them outside.
Ah, how'd that go?
and they were all flat leg on the ground. The next morning.
Yeah.
All dead. Every one of them. I didn't harden them off. And so Larry, obviously, Paul, you better, you know.
Yeah, don't forget the hardening off stage. Usually about a week or so of trundling them back in and out, you know, making sure that they're not outside if it's too cold. And starting them out in the partial shade and then moving them gradually into sun. Don't just take them from the inside to the outside.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Yeah, thanks, Paul.
You're welcome.
I think mine turned completely white. There was no chlorophyll left.
Yeah, the sun will do that. It just burnt them completely. Crispy critters.
Oh, boy. Give us a call, 1-800-642-1234. If you have a question today, maybe you've got an indoor gardening question or an indoor flower question, or maybe you've got a gardening question or looking forward to even the vegetable garden. Lisa Johnson, our guest, we can talk trees and shrubs as well. Lisa in Appleton says, I saved some milkweed seeds last fall. Obviously, she wants to get some milkweed plants going, maybe for the monarch butterflies.
Yeah.
And wondering, what's the best way to handle those seeds?
I am thinking, I'm wondering whether they need a cold period.
Well, that's
or
what
not.
I was thinking.
Yeah. I've usually stored mine in the garage over winter.
Yeah.
They do seed by themselves quite nicely outside, actually, if you sow them in the fall. I guess what I would do at this point, and I would have to look it up to be sure, you could probably split your crop in two and put some of them in the refrigerator and keep some of them out and plant both sets in the spring and see which one does better, because we're running out of time here for cold treatment.
Isn't that amazing?
Yeah.
We're running out of time.
Yeah.
For cold treatment.
It feels like it's never going to end, but.
Oh, but it will. Believe me, we'll be gardening. We'll be outside sooner or later. Jennifer in Stillwater, Minnesota. Hello.
Hi, how are you doing?
Great. Thanks for calling.
I am going to try and attempt to break ground for a new garden. And the problem I'm running into is I am not finding the price range as far as a garden tiller. I was looking on Craigslist for $100, and the only thing I could find was something that didn't include the motor.
No.
I'm finding very expensive tillers, and I just want to have like a 25-foot by 25-foot garden for pumpkins and zucchini and such.
Mm-hmm.
And is there a better way than tilling the garden or the ground, or should I do pots? Because I want pumpkins, so they spread out.
If you really wanted to till, one thing you could do is rent. And
that's
you can
very
rent
true.
A tiller for a weekend. I done that myself.
Yep.
I don't have one, and I've rented it, and it worked out great. But there are other ways to do it, too.
Yeah. Thank you, though, for mentioning that, because if you do want a till, and you don't want to invest in a tiller, that's probably a really good way to go. And, yeah, I can't think of any tillers that are $100.
You could certainly rent one for way less than $100
yeah.
for the weekend.
The other thing that you could do, if all that you want to plant are zucchini and and pumpkins, is you might want to try a type of permaculture sort of thing where you're actually growing on top of the soil, but you're growing in straw bales or straw that is layered with soil. If you look up lasagna gardening on the internet and also look up permaculture, and you might want to add zucchini or pumpkin to your search terms. And because they have fairly shallow root systems, you should be able to grow those if you really don't feel like breaking your back tilling every year.
Yeah.
The other thing is that with a permaculture type of method, you don't have the weed problem that you have when you till. You tend to bring up all kinds of new weeds. So you might want to try that. Be aware.
Yeah, I looked at I looked at that and I wondered, okay, so you get, you know, I don't have a truck or anything, so you, would you have somebody bring them? And then what do you do when you're done with them? Like, as far as them breaking down, do you use them year after year? Or?
Yeah, it now it is going to break down. You do have to layer maybe every other year or so, depending on how deep you run it. I would say at least 8 inches, if not a foot deep. So I would have somebody bring you a few yards of topsoil and several bales of straw and, you know, layer those as directed. I'm trying to remember. I think we might have a publication on that at the Learning Store, which is learningstore.uwex.edu. We do have some, like, raised beds.
Yep.
And
I think there's one on. I think there's one that's sort of like permaculture.
Yeah.
It might even be in the title.
Yeah. Well, there's a bunch of new ones on compost and community gardens and that type of thing that are out there.
Our Learning Store folks often listen on Friday, so we may get a note from the Learning Store folks on Facebook and say, oh, yeah, we got this or that, and we'll find that out.
But that just another possibility. Do you have real heavy clay soil?
Well, we live right on a river bluff, so we've got a lot of sandstone under there.
Okay.
So I think it's pretty heavy soil. I wouldn't say clay, but it's definitely not fluffy.
we know what you mean. Here in the Madison area, we have a lot of that clay as well. But if you have sandstone, then you know that it's gonna at least drain well.
My only other problem is the deer. That's my I planted last year, and I was like, what happened to all my little beautiful seedlings? And the squirrels and the deer were there laughing.
No.
Oh, that's rude.
Well, there's not much you can... Fencing or a dog?
Yeah, fencing, a dog. There are some sprays and so on that you can use around the perimeter of the garden, but if the deer want to get in, that's a problem.
Yeah. Well, good luck, Jennifer, and, you know, take some photos of that new garden and send them on my Facebook page so we can see them.
Yeah, that'd be great.
And call us back and keep us up to date on how you're progressing with this new garden system. Thanks a lot for calling. We had an email from Nancy. We were talking about hostas a few minutes ago, and Nancy says, several years ago, my husband dug up some hostas at work to split them up and brought them home in a plastic bag. He let them lay next to the house, intending to plant shortly. However, we had an early snowstorm, and they ended up getting covered up by a snowbank. In the spring, the snow melted away, and we were just ready to throw them out in the trash when we noticed they were starting to sprout.
Yep.
We planted them in the yard, and they lived happily ever after. I love that.
Oh, it's nice to get a happy story, isn't it?
Oh, man, yeah. That's a good one.
I have always told the master gardeners that you could pretty much, you know, maybe not in a winter like this, but if you get snow cover...
Yeah.
You could almost leave them out in the driveway, and they'd probably still be okay. But
oh, man. Debbie in Green Bay is not asking about hostas. I think she's asking about something else. Hi, Deb.
Hi. I have a question. Last year I got, some tulips in, you know, like when you buy them in the store, they come in those plastic pots, like.
Mm-hmm.
And I intended to plant them, and of course, you know, didn't get around to it. So they're still in the plastic pots, like, in my garage. Could I just start them again in those pots, or do I need to wait until, like, fall and then plant them again?
If they've got, well, first of all, if they survive the winter temperatures in your garage, because we've been a little colder than normal.
Yeah.
If they do start to sprout and come back, you can just take them out of the pot and plant them in a clump just like that. And you can do that, you know, once the soil thaws in the spring. You don't have to wait until fall at all to do that.
Okay. And then should I just water them about the same time as things start to thaw, because they've been in that? Okay.
Yep.
All right. I will try it. Thank you.
Give it a shot. Thanks
Good
a lot
luck.
For calling. And boy, we have some open lines. Get you on pretty quickly with your question at 1-800-642-1234. Call us up. Jody in Green Bay, thanks for calling. Hi.
Hi there. I have a different kind of a question for you. In our part of the state here, they are now telling people to leave their water running in their homes because our frost line has gone down to 5 and 5.5 feet.
Wow.
And I'm just wondering how that's going to affect our growing season, getting into the gardens, stuff coming up for, you know, the bloom and that kind of thing.
Gosh, how much snow do you have? I'm surprised you got
that.
Oh,
gosh. We probably get about at least 2 feet. Well, I think it's even more than that. It's hard to say.
And you still got 5.5 feet of frost.
That's amazing.
That's amazing.
It's getting deeper because more and more of our villages and towns, and here even in Green Bay, they're starting to tell people to leave at least one faucet running because the frost line is down to the water, you know, where the water comes into the
wow.
The homes and stuff.
Hmm. Well, that's a really good question. I would imagine, you know, the thing that tends to be a real big problem with plant survival over the winter is not necessarily the roots getting frozen, but them freezing and thawing. I would think there may be some marginally hardy plants that could be badly affected. And it's certainly, if the frost line is down that low, it is going to take longer for the soil to thaw out, in the spring. But I can't predict necessarily what it's going to do to various plants. You know, we had problems in Madison last year and various places around the state because we got rain on top of snow, and then we had ice forming around the crowns of plants, and particularly things like chrysanthemums and so on don't like that. But, you know, usually if you've got a good snow cover, that's pretty good, but I'm worried about the Japanese maples here in Madison because all the temperatures that we've had below zero and so on are going to be tough on them.
Yeah. I wish we had more. We could tell you more, but that's pretty much, man, I have not, I can't remember a year.
No.
We'd have municipalities telling you to keep the water running a little bit.
Yeah.
The frost that low. Yeah.
Well, and maybe putting it out there, maybe there will be other people that can respond.
Yeah. Others may have some comments on it, too. Yeah, thank you.
Thanks for letting us know.
Thanks for letting us know, Jody. That's too bad. Pat in McHenry, Illinois. I bet you don't have 5.5 feet of frost.
I hope not. I really hope not. I am calling for a couple things. One is, it was a couple years ago, the summer of the big drought, that suddenly the deer discovered our vegetable garden, which I had vegetable gardens for 20 years here at this house. And so I thought back to Lori Otto, seeing her gardens, her native garden, and how she used, I think she used wire to zigzag across her garden to keep the deer out. Well, I thought, I don't want to be bumping into wire, so I used fishing line. I had a short garden fence of about 18 inches for the rabbit. So I just used those same poles that extended up about to 3 to 4 feet, something four feet plus, and strung the fishing line plus so that I would make sure I saw the line as well as other people see the line. I just added some surveyor's tape periodically, the flutter.
Yep. Some people use CDs, too, to flash in the light, that same sort of thing.
Yeah. And that then kept the deer out of
Excellent.
My vegetable garden.
Wow.
So I'm glad for that. Then I also wanted to comment that hostas in the shade, it's kind of fun to intermingle those with some native plants to help encourage the native insects in that. So things like wild ginger, wild geraniums.
Bloodroot. Yeah. Yeah, I do that too. Oh my God. Yeah. Trillium.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All those wonderful, wonderful things. Yeah. So that's it.
Yeah. Thank you so much for calling. And you do the same thing, as you were saying, Lisa.
Yep. Yep, I do like to use the natives. I particularly like using Virginia bluebell, although that does go dormant later, and Dutchman's breeches, and mm-hmm. Oh, we've got so many wonderful native plants.
Absolutely. Pat, thanks again. Yeah, appreciate it. Appreciate it very much. We have Randy in Cumberland. Gosh, I haven't been in Cumberland in a long time. I've got to get up there and visit. Randy, hi. Thank you for calling.
Yeah, the reason they want the water to run is because the pipes are on the road and it draws the frost down, where in your yards, it's not going to be no frost on that snow.
Ah, okay. Yeah, that makes more sense. Of the pipes are going to be... If I understand what you said, some of the pipes are coming up above ground in your house, or they're maybe I should have say it again.
They're on the ground 6 feet down on the roadbed, and where there's a roadbed, the frost gets pushed down.
Oh,
where past your sidewalk and in your yard where there's snow, then there's not the frost.
Okay. Okay. All right. So, yeah. And I guess Judith's just telling me now that quite a few people are calling in to say the pipe issue is in the roads, as you say, and sidewalks, not in the gardens under snow.
Yeah, yeah. That would make sense.
Okay. All right. Well, thank you, Randy. I appreciate that explanation. And that helped. And a lot of other people had, I guess, a similar kind of thing, as Judith's shaking her head, nodding, yes, you're right. Thank you. Marianne and Gays Mills. Hi, thank you for calling.
Good morning.
Morning.
I have a question about my pear trees. I have a Bartlett and I have a Duchess. And what I'm finding last year and this year both, is this last year especially, I have a worm in almost every one of my pears.
Oh.
And the bottom, the stem end of them is kind of brown and scabby looking, and I'm wondering what to use this year to avoid that problem.
Okay, you mean the end of the pear is brown and scabby looking?
Yep.
Yeah.
Okay. Okay. Well, there are a number of different insect pests that can attack pears just the same as apples. It could be apple maggot that's getting in. There are a number of fruit worms, too, although most of them are going to be feeding on the leaves, but some of them also feed on the fruits.
I don't seem to have a problem on the leaves. They're just
getting into the fruits. Okay, it also could be codling moth. All of these are going to be types of pests that bore into the fruit. What I would do, actually, is do you have internet access?
Yes, I do.
Okay. If you go to the Learning Store, we have a publication that's called Growing Pears in Wisconsin, and it talks about those two pests that I mentioned, apple maggot and codling moth. And you're probably going to need to do some kind of spray program. And I would suggest using yellow sticky cards and red sticky balls to monitor the population so you know, you don't just spray indiscriminately, but you know when the population is getting to the point where you're going to have some issues.
Okay, now would that be can I spray either before or after drop? Because I have bees in my garden, in my orchard.
Oh, yeah, too. Yeah, you absolutely do not want to spray during when the plants are blooming. And you wait until after petal fall. And depending on the product, if it were apples, actually, I'd probably recommend using kale and clay because that's far less toxic, but since you have to take it off later on, it doesn't work so well with soft-skinned fruits like pears.
What do you mean you have to take it off?
Well, kale and clay is a spray that is well, it's actually a clay, and it's tiny particles. And if you use it on apples, your whole tree looks like it's been sprayed with cement.
Yeah.
But it is very effective at both disease and insect control, but you do have to wipe it off later on. And
it sounds like a pretty big job. I don't have a good water source that close to the garden, so probably. Okay. But would that be I would use the same spray on the apples as I use on the pears? I checked the worm site a few years ago, and it didn't look like, I didn't notice anything, any kind of a spray or anything for the pears, so I haven't been treating them at all.
Well, you know, if you didn't have issues with the pears, you shouldn't. So you did the right thing. But once you do start to have issues, there's also Midwest spray guide that is on the Learning Store site that can give you some schedules. We try and reduce pesticide use as much as possible. But sometimes when, if you're getting every pear infested, that's a problem. You know, some people also put out birdhouses, like wrens and so on will help keep insects down. So you might want to look at that as well.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I have lots of birds in the garden.
Oh,
okay,
good.
I'll just probably have to throw a tarp over top of my beehives and spray in the evening, and then in the morning take it off.
Yes, exactly. Yeah, and try and sight the beehives as far away from your trees as you can.
Possible. Yep. Good luck, Mary Ann. Thank you very much for calling. Lisa Johnson, Dane County UW Extension Horticulture Educator, our guest. I'm Larry Mueller. You are listening to Garden Talk here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Great to have you listening in here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Larry Mueller here. My guest, Lisa Johnson, Dane County UW Extension Horticulture Educator. Talking, houseplants and gardens and trees and shrubs, lawns, you name it, on this kind of cold, wintry day. And also, we've been talking about Garden Expo, which is on this weekend at the Dane County Expo Center. Your opportunity. Well, Lisa and I will be talking 9:30 on Saturday morning, so looking forward to that. But there are many, many, many speakers. There are many, many, many vendors. And I just hope you'll go to the Garden Expo. If you type in Garden Expo Madison, you're going to get it's going to pop right up. And you'll find out all of the great information out there about it. So hope to see you at the Garden Expo. Jane in Carlton, Minnesota, thank you for calling. Hi.
Hi. I just have a vegetable garden question.
Sure.
Every year, it seems like no matter what the season is, hot, dry, whatever, our onions and our beets grow out of the ground. And especially the onions, once the tops come out of the ground, the top of the onion itself, not the stem, they stop growing. Should I just continue covering them with dirt? Should I try planting a little deeper, but that doesn't seem to work either.
Is it on a slope or something that you're getting erosion?
No, not much. No. It's a huge garden, vegetable garden.
You might want to try putting a little mulch around the top of the bulb so that you continue to get development if that's been an issue.
Like I was thinking maybe planting them even in a trench and keep pushing that dirt over them.
Yeah, that would work too.
That would work though, huh?
Yeah.
Could work.
Should.
What about your watering? Judith was just thinking, I wonder if you had shallow watering, would that cause it, Lisa?
Or very forceful watering.
Yeah, or the other end. Yeah. The other extreme. Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, you mean too much water at a time?
Like if you were using a hose without a...
No, we have like a tripod.
Okay, so you're not going to...
A circular sprinkler type of thing on there, and we will water for like an hour at
a
time.
Okay, so, all right, so you're doing probably
an
inch.
And we have lake water, so it's nice. It's not ice cold. Okay, well, I will try... Mounding them. I was just afraid to do that maybe...
Well, why don't you mound half of them?
Or a third? The experimental method.
I think it really is a good idea. Yeah. Okay, thank you. I really enjoy the garden program.
All right. Thanks a lot for calling, Jane. I don't know what else to do.
Yeah, maybe she's got sandy soil and it tends to, I don't know.
Well, that's weird. Amend it every year with homemade or bought in compost. We have, my husband calls it sandy loam,
Okay.
But it's not what I think of as sand.
Sandy loam, okay.
Yeah, but we amend it, and we've had the garden for about maybe 6 years, so.
You know what, I'm going to ask someone, if you've had this experience and you've covered your onion, your plants with some dirt or whatever, give us a call and let us know how it worked for you. Jane, stay listening. We'll see what we
can
get.
I will.
Yeah. We'll appreciate your call. And the number for you to call to join in with that information or with your own question or comment, 1-800-642-1234. 1-800-642-1234. Give us a call. We'd love to hear from you. And we got open lines. We'll get you on pretty quickly. We have a Facebook question from Bob, who says, we're establishing a garden in our Lac des Flambeaux sandy soil. I've used a lot of commercial compost, but, you know, it gets expensive. A local cranberry farm sells loads of cranberry compost. Is this a good alternative?
You know, I have, I know that they were using that out at the West Madison Ag Station, that they were trying that. And they may have even published something about it. Wonder if Janet is listening out there at the West Madison Ag Station. But I think that is supposed to be a good compost to use. I would think, you know, it would be slightly acid. I would think that would be fine because it's fine leaved and so on.
Yeah,
I'd at least, you know, give it a try on a small area and see how it works for you.
I would not be afraid to try it.
Yeah.
That's for sure. Don in Warren, Illinois, called in to say that butterfly weed needs only to be stratified for 30 days, so there's plenty of time in response to that earlier caller who wondered about stratifying butterfly seeds.
Yeah, great. Okay. I could not remember.
Yeah. So 30 days, that's, you still got plenty of time, I think.
Yeah.
And we have a series of photos, which I haven't even looked at myself yet, but Judith's letting me know that there's posted a series of photos on how someone built his lasagna garden.
Oh, okay.
Sean sent it, I believe. We'll pop those right up on my Facebook page right now. There they are.
Yeah, used leaves. Okay, yeah, cardboard. Yep, that's one of the things you can use. Oh. Nice garden.
Wow, was it ever. So he laid down some cardboard, and then he puts in a bunch of leaves and probably other things there.
Yeah, usually you're going to be layering soil and then some what we call browns as far as compost goes, which is dried leaves or shredded cardboard or, you know, dead material. And sometimes some people will also put some green material in there as well.
So some great photos. Sean, thanks a lot for sending those along. And I hope you'll take a look at them if you're interested in possibly. And we've had people calling who may have an interest in this type of gardening. Some nice photos there. And Bob and Nina has a comment. Hi, Bob. Thanks for calling.
Hey, Larry. How you doing?
Good.
We haven't talked in a long time. First of all, I wanted to send my regrets to Shelley, or about Shelley.
Yeah.
She was my friend, and your friend, too.
Yeah.
But I, in preparation for the show this weekend, I'm the vinegar man, by the way.
Ah.
I found a, not a catalog, but a tribute, a 75-year anniversary to Wisconsin Public Television and Radio, and you just happened to be in there.
Ah,
you know, my dad had something to do with that when the 75th radio thing. My dad used to work at public radio, and
this is a fine tribute. I don't know, Larry, if you ever saw this. But I'm going to give it to you. I'm going to give it to you tomorrow.
Oh, wonderful!
So you can pass it along. But
very cool.
I just happened to find it. Yeah, I just happened to find it, and you know, it was fun to look at because it has the early television, early radio also,
mm-hmm.
pictures and staff and so forth in there. So it's a good time, and there is just a little blurb about gardening in there. So I do qualify for this call. you'll see it. If you get a chance, stop by the booth tomorrow also.
I will.
And talk to us. But I'll give you the book first.
Okay, so. Thanks a lot.
Yeah, I'd be interested in seeing that too.
Yeah, I'll share it with you. I'm sure. Yeah, your dad, Ralph, was this general manager, station manager.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, at one time, and yep. a producer.
Angelin in Hill Point. Hi, thank you for calling.
Hi, Larry. I've been growing onions for a very long time, and I had the same kind of problem that your caller had. And I don't think it's that unusual of a problem. And so I thought about it, and I thought about when I grow leeks, I mound them up. So I decided I'd try that with my onions, and I created trenches and put my onion seed in there. And then as the onions would grow, I would take the soil that I had on the side of the trench, and I would start to cover them up. And ever since I've done that method, and I've done it now for about 6 years, I get the most big, delicious, wonderful onions.
Oh, right.
Yay. Okay. Problem solved.
Yeah.
So you trench them. Okay.
Yes, I do.
Interesting.
Well, thanks, Angelin.
You're welcome.
Yeah, appreciate it very much. Cindy in Plainfield has something, too. Hi, Cindy.
Yep. Hi there. I want to echo that last caller's remarks. We grow onions commercially in the Central Sands, and when we plant fields of onions, they are planted in beds. There are generally about 6 rows of onions per bed. The beds are about 4 to 6 inches. They're raised off, well, not off of the soil surface, but they're not quite as high as a potato hill, but about 4 to 6 inches mounded up.
Hmm.
And you get great onions.
Yeah, we raise hundreds of acres of them.
Oh,
yep.
Wow.
Yep.
Well, Plainfield, yeah, lots of onions, probably a couple of potatoes in there, too.
Lots of carrots, and lots of potatoes. Yep.
Yeah, that's a wonderful area for it. Cindy, thank you.
Okay, bye-bye.
Bye, appreciate it. And let's do one more. Marv, Arborvita, hi.
Hey, one more thought on the onion thing. I know that there can, in some cases, be a big difference if in the day length variety onion that you use. And there's a company in Texas that I buy my sets from. I can't think of the name because I'm in my vehicle, but if you check online, I think they are probably the biggest producer of onions. And they have a really good email that they send out every few months, and just terrific information. But the day length is talked about real often by the owner of this company, and how important that is. Different varieties, like way up in north where we are, we have the long day variety. And that could make a difference. The onion might even stop growing, you know, at a certain
mm-hmm.
point.
Yeah, onions can bolt. Know? Yeah.
Right. So that might be it. And the other thing is I always make a point of thinning my plants so they have enough room as they start to grow, you know, take some early on and when they're young, and then let the other ones mature.
Yeah.
And that helps too. But I don't know. The day length thing might be something worth checking. If nothing else, it's a terrific place to get some good information on onions.
So. All right. Thank you so much. Marv, appreciate your call. So lots of good tips here on onions from people who are out there and have the experience. Pat in Fox Lake. Hi. Thank you for calling.
Hi. Thank you. For the next couple of years, at least, we'll need to be gone during the good summer growing months in July and August. And I have a lovely perennial garden that is right against the street, so everybody sees it. And last year I tried having weeders, and that kind of failed. And I have flowers, and I put beets and carrots in this garden. And I'm wondering if you have any ideas for me that I can get my garden planted, and then what to do in between for my absence.
Oh, man.
That's going to be tough.
Yeah,
mulching. Yeah.
You can mulch the heck out of it, but, you know.
You still have seeds fall on top of it. And
you're still going to have somebody there.
Yeah.
To look over for 2 months. If you're gone 2 months.
That's a long time.
That's a long time.
Especially if we have a drought again, you'd need somebody there to
you'd have to
water.
Have somebody there to water, especially it's right along the sidewalk. Sounds like it. So
is there somebody you could barter with? Or I know in Madison we have a sort of like a time bank exchange thing where, you know, you do something for somebody and they do something for you. It's called the Madison Time Bank, but I don't know if you have something like that in Fox Lake, or maybe local garden club would want to take it on.
Yeah, it's a really tough. You have to have somebody.
Yeah, right. It won't take care of itself.
And so if you wanted to do it commercially, there's probably a commercial, you know, there's probably somebody out there in Fox Lake area, I bet, that has a business.
Yeah, lawn maintenance, garden maintenance business.
That for a couple of months, you'd probably have to shell out some money, but at least then you're hiring somebody and paying them, and they're
going to show up.
You'd hope anyway. Thank you so much. Lisa Johnson, our guest today, Dane County UW Extension Horticulture Educator, specializes in hort education for the home gardener and for horticulture professionals in the green industry. I'm Larry Mueller for Garden Talk, here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Gardening can be such a pleasure, and depending on where you are in the season, there are different things to take care of. You might not think there's much to do during our long Wisconsin winters, but you know what? There's still a few tasks that you can check off your list. Larry Mueller here. Great to have you along for this edition of Garden Talk on the Ideas Network. Lucky to have a great horticulturist with us today, Lisa Johnson. She's a Dane County UW Extension Horticulture Educator, and she specializes in horticulture education for home gardeners. She also works with the Master Gardener Program. And Lisa, as always, great pleasure.
Thanks, Larry.
You and I are going to be doing a little thing tomorrow morning at the Garden Expo.
Yeah, that'll be fun.
9:30 to 10:30. If you are going to the Garden Expo tomorrow, Saturday, I hope you will come and say hello. We'll be speaking at one of the rooms.
Yeah, I think it's a demo room B, I think.
Something like that. But it doesn't matter. There are a lot of great people there to help you. There's also, you're going to get a nice publication or bulletin that's going to show where all the speeches and so forth are going to be taking place.
Yeah, nice map with everything.
And you're going to have a chance to really be an area that smells good and is green and warm. It's wonderful. And as a matter of fact, our friends over at Wisconsin Public Television have given us 10 pairs of tickets to this weekend's Garden Expo to give away. They are good for one day's admission, and you could do it either a Saturday or Sunday. The winner's names will be in the will call window. So you obviously we can't send you the tickets, but just go to Will Call, and we'll give you 10 minutes to enter. So you want to send an email to talk@wpr.org. So that's talk@wpr.org. Or you can call us at 1-800-642-1234. 1-800-642-1234. We need your first and last names for the list and a phone number to call to let you know that you won, although we'll probably, you know, we may try to read some names if we can. We'll see. Certainly, we'll get back to you, but I'm sure there are going to be more than 10 people. So go to WPR.org. You can enter there or call 1-800-642-1234. Get your name in. Judith will do a random drawing of all the entries at the end of 10 minutes. So in about 20 minutes after 12, that's when it closes. So I wouldn't wait. In the meantime, you can also post a question on my Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show, or you could email us a question at talk@WPR.org, or you can phone in with a question for Lisa. We'd love to hear from you. Liz in Fitchburg, thanks for calling. Hi.
Hi, Larry and Lisa. See, I have a large perennial garden that I've planted over the last 5.5 years. And I have a trumpet vine that is going to be 6 years old now this spring that's growing up a trellis. Now, last summer, it was huge, just beautiful leaves and growing very, very nicely. But I have yet to get a blossom on it. I've been told that it takes at least 5 years for a trumpet vine to produce a blossom. So I expected them last summer, and there was nothing, not a bud, nothing. What am I doing wrong?
Do you have it planted in a lot of shade?
No. There's a lot of trees in the yard, but where I have it, it gets some direct sun in the morning, and then for sure at noon, there's some direct sun. And then as the sun moves across, there is a little bit of shade. So it has a lot of sun.
Like 6 hours?
Oh, yes, at least.
Okay.
At least.
Mm-hmm. All right. Yeah. Well, we can rule that out then. I believe that they grow, or that they bloom on new wood. So unless you're, yeah, that shouldn't be an issue then, even if you're pruning it. Huh.
Yeah, I pruned it this fall. I left it alone except for some stragglers because,
yeah.
I mean, it was hanging off the trellis.
Yeah,
I could hardly walk under it. So
they're very vigorous plants. In fact, I have some people, somebody sent me once a photo of it coming up in their, through the bottom of the floor of their shed. And I've had people telling me it's coming up, you know, under their decks and so on. So it's usually a very vigorous plant that not many people have problems with. So I would give it another year. Another thing is, if you're fertilizing it heavily, and goodness knows they don't really need a lot of fertilizer, that could be, yeah,
yeah, don't
quit
do
doing
it.
That.
Yeah, I don't put any fertilizer on it because, I mean,
okay.
It obviously is a healthy plant.
Yeah.
I mean, it's got nice woody stems, and some of them are fairly thick, and there's new growth, and the leaves look great, so, but just no blossom.
I would give it another year. Might have some this year. But the reason that I mentioned the fertilizer is that sometimes if you put a lot of nitrogen on a plant, it'll produce a whole lot of wonderful leaves, but at the expense of producing flowers. So,
yep.
Oh, okay.
There you go.
Yeah. Okay. Well, thank you very much.
Thanks,
yeah,
Liz. Thanks
that.
A lot for calling. And you can join in too, although lots of people are calling in right now, but they're calling in to enter the contest. So,
yeah.
So that's okay. That's all right. You can do that. You can also email us at talk@WPR.org with your questions, or post on my Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show. And, of course, we'd always love to hear from you, so you can go ahead and do that. On the Garden Expo, let's go back to that for just a minute. First, our sessions that we're going to do together is we're going to kind of run it. We're going to tell some stories, probably.
Mm-hmm.
And we are going to give away. We have some giveaways. Every 5 or 6 minutes, we'll be giving away a cool book. It might relate to gardening. Might relate to cooking. I think there's a Jerry Apps book in there. So we'll be giving away a gift every 5, 6 minutes. Talk a little bit about Shelley, Ryan.
Mm-hmm.
We'll do that. And, of course, then we'll get into some discussions about, you know, what's on the gardener's minds who show up. So
right. Yeah, that's always fun because you get such a variety of different topics that people are interested in. And
it's always fun to see it. And we usually get a really nice crowd, and it's
mm-hmm.
always fun to see everybody who shows up. So I'm really looking forward to that. And then you might just comment on, you mentioned earlier, but I think it bears repeating, that this is one of the real super education opportunities, and Extension is there in force. And what can people find at the Extension booths at the Garden Expo?
Well, they can find some of our specialists from campus, and people like myself from out in the counties who have been trained in horticulture, so, and also a whole bunch of wonderful master gardeners. We're all there to answer your questions, talk to you about gardening. If you have a particularly troublesome issue in your yard, definitely bring that question and talk to us. We'll have our publications unit there, so you can buy publications. I know Brian Huddleston is bringing lots of his disease fact sheets. I was helping him set up in his booth yesterday, and so he's got lots of those that people can look at and take with them. And of course the vendors, the wonderful vendors. But Phil Pelletieri is going to be there. We'll have people from the soils lab. We'll have people from the Master Gardener program to talk about that. My Master Gardener program is starting up the week of the 18th and the 26th, respectively. So
new education to enroll to become a Master Gardener?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Oh,
yeah.
Cool.
Yeah, Master Gardeners are wonderful community volunteers who are trained in horticulture and interact with the public to share their knowledge. And they get their education through UW Extension offices all over the state, and almost every county has a yep. Master Gardener Association. And so the Master Gardeners are out in force at the expo as well.
Lisa Johnson, our guest again. Oh, by the way, Judith says, "Hey, the contest is over. We're going to be announcing the winners soon." She's inundated with calls. She was inundated with calls and emails and Facebooks and all that. So she will. We'll be announcing winners.
Just a
little bit. Oh, she took almost 70 calls.
Wow!
In that short.
That Judith is amazing.
So there you have it. Well, now you can call in with a question. Call in with a question or comment. So now we actually had nobody waiting online because everybody was calling in to enter the contest. So here's your chance to ask a question or make a comment to Lisa at 1-800-642-1234, 1-800-642-1234. Give us a call with your questions and comments. You know, there's almost every year we'll see some new varieties, some mm-hmm. new flowers, new veggies and stuff. Anything catching your eye yet? Do you have any, you know, things that, I might try that out, or I might recommend that new flower or that new veggie?
Oh, gosh. You know, when the attack of the catalogs, as I call it, begins, I'm always poring over them, and you know, I make my Cadillac list of things that I want to try, and then I sort of downsize it to a Chevy, and then usually I end up with the Yugo list. There are a number of different perennials that I would like to try. Lately, there's been a whole lot of new coneflowers on the market, some of which are hardier in our area and some of which are less hardy. It depends on the parentage, but they tend to be a little bit on the expensive side, so I usually don't recommend that people try a whole lot of them.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, try a couple of them. Many of them I have found to be just excellent garden plants. And being a hostaholic, admitted, I always have some new hostas that I'm looking forward to trying. I'm going to be talking about hostas actually at the Garden Expo at one point.
You have another presentation. Is it Saturday? You're talking.
Yeah, I actually have three. One is on organic techniques. One is on hostas and companion plants, and then there's another one on container gardening.
Wow! So you're front and center. My goodness.
It's fun to talk about plants, you know, with well, people that want to hear about them.
Absolutely. Sarah in Waukesha, thanks a lot for calling. Hi.
Hi. Thanks for taking this call. I just had a real quick question about growing corn. I have a little daughter, and she was very into helping me grow the corn, and we both sat out and cried at our corn when it was as tall as us because it just blew over one day.
Oh.
It lodged.
Yeah.
So what's the trick there with growing corn in smaller patches, and how come the corn doesn't blow over in the farmer's fields down the road?
Mm.
It was just really confusing and hard to explain to my little one, so I wanted to know if there
how
was
many rows did you have
next season.
Yeah, how many rows did you have?
To kind of keep that.
How many rows did you have?
There was like 5 rows, a good couple feet apart. We had also tried to do the Three Sisters garden with the pumpkins at the base.
Yeah, because that usually helps support. Hmm.
Yeah,
is it real windy?
It helped support it when it all fell over at once.
Oh. Well, you can always try, you know, if that is an issue for you because it's a smaller planting, you can always try, you know, putting in fence posts and then string around it to support.
Right.
You might try mounding a little bit of soil at the base of the plants if that's an issue. I must admit that corn is not one of my...
To the conversation that you had earlier with the onion.
Yeah.
I'll try doing it that way instead of putting it in the mound, put
yeah.
it between the...
You know, our... Huh. Your county ag agent probably would be... a good person to check with that,
County.
Yeah, or Kristen Krakowski there, the horticulture agent. I haven't had a whole lot of experience with growing corn myself. I know it is harder
either.
In small gardens.
Like, why does that happen in small backyards?
Yeah,
the giant farmers.
Yeah, well, I grew corn. I had sweet corn in my garden.
Yeah,
I usually have 2-3 rows or four. I think I used to have, and
I
don't think
just,
it ever
like,
happened
it was
to
like
me.
A 10-by-10-foot patch. That was dedicated to the Three Sisters, and but we have chickens, so we were just able to just pull out some of the stalks as they, you know, and gave them to the chickens, and the chickens just had a field day.
Oh, I'll bet they had a great time with it. But was there a big windstorm?
It was bittersweet, but
yeah,
we want to do it without, you know.
I tried again because there may have just been
some
weird freak
weather.
Thing. I would definitely give it.
Yeah, you know, the weather has been.
Yeah, so I give it another shot, Sarah. Yeah, you know, I never had the problem, and I had sweet corn for a long time.
Yeah, and it sounds like they put it far enough apart that it should have been able to.
Yeah, it should have been. It shouldn't have gotten too skinny from being too close together.
Lack of light.
Yeah. Good luck. Give it a shot. Let me know. thanks for calling. Randy in Spring Green. Hello.
Yes, I've got a raspberry patch, red raspberries, and I had separated from June-bearing and ever-bearing. Well, they've encroached upon each other.
They do that.
I have one big bed now.
Yeah.
Can I cut them down to about 8 inches and have them all be fall-bearing?
No. Summer-bearing raspberries are physiologically, they have a 2-year life cycle, each cane. So the first year it produces a primacane, and it doesn't produce any fruits. The second year it produces a floricane from that same stem and will produce fruits. So if you cut it down after its first year, it wouldn't produce any fruits for you. The thing about the everbearing is that every year they produce floricane. So they have kind of a 1-year cane. So I hear about this kind of problem all the time, and I've experienced it myself, and it's really frustrating.
Yeah.
it's going to be hard to give you some advice on what to do, but I guess what I would do is if you see them towards the everbearing end of the garden, if you see plants starting to fruit early that might be from your red raspberries, you could cut those canes out, which is horrible because then that deprives you of the fruit. But that might be one way to try and keep them separated.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Distance and eternal vigilance, I guess, is about your
there
best
you go.
Bet.
Thanks, Randy. And Judy in Evergreen Park, Illinois. Hi, thank you for calling.
Thank you. Yes, I used to live in Wisconsin, so I feel like I can still call.
Oh,
absolutely.
Good. I inherited a new house with a front lawn that is horrible, so I'd love to get rid of it, put it all in plants, and I'm letting myself get stymied. How can I come up with a garden plan? Because wintertime is the best time to plan.
Mm-hmm.
And just dive in. I'm not afraid to do it. I just can't get a foothold of a start.
Well, I can tell you that at the Learning Store, there is a great publication on planning a garden.
Really good one.
And they've just redone it as well.
Yep.
So if you type in learningstore.uwex.edu and in the search box, if you put garden planner, it will walk you through the process of how to think about the spaces in your yard. Do you, do you want to see turf? Do you want to see, do you want space for a vegetable garden? Do you want space for a flower garden? Thinking about views outside the windows. Are there any power lines overhead? So it'll walk you through the process of thinking about your space. And then it also gives you some options, it gives you some examples of some plans as well. And it talks about some very practical things like windbreaks and, shade for lowering your heating bills in the summer, but making sure that in the winter, you have access to windows and so on. So I would definitely recommend that. It's a real good one for a beginner.
Mm-hmm.
Sounds great.
Yeah.
Learningstore.uwex.edu.
Yep. And you're going to find find a whole bunch more of publications there. If you're thinking about growing tomatoes or potatoes or whatever it is, you're going to have all kinds of publications there that will give you recommendations on even varieties or how and when to plant. It's
easy to get lost in.
it's like going to a library. You start, oh my goodness me, here's all this, and then there's that, and the other thing, and
it's all research based information. So it's
that's the good part of it.
Yeah,
it's material or information that you and I can be sure has been tested,
mm-hmm.
and tried and true, and so. Yeah. Thank you so much for it's nice to have an opportunity just to plug the Learning Store and to plug those extension publications. You have some that you've worked on with folks, if I'm not mistaken. Yeah.
Mostly fact sheets and brochures, but
but lots of them. Yeah. And the winners, we have the winners.
Oh, this is exciting.
Can I give the winners here? The winners. Here are the winners. You can go to pick your tickets up at the Will Call office at Garden Expo on Saturday or Sunday. Greg S. in Madison, Dave S. in Augusta, near Partyville, Nancy G., then Brianna W., Jason F., Christy D., Kathy A., Mary Claire K., Linda D., and Randy K. And we'll try and contact this afternoon. Lisa, we'll see you tomorrow morning.
Okay, I'm all ready for it.
I am too. And I hope to see you at the Garden Expo as well. Thanks for listening. Stay with us. Lots in store.